the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax. But buckle up and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. I'm here with my co-host, Brooke Medina. Brooke, we've gone from stay-at-home orders to all-out just craziness in the culture, and we're inundated with a lot of news, protests, riots. And what's your thoughts kind of just on where we are today as a country? We're about, what, 6 months out to the election? Maybe less than 6 months, is that right? I'm so bad at math, Brooke. I'm at a public policy think tank.
A little less than 5 months, I think, at this point.
I wasn't too bad. I was trying to count in my head as we're going. Any predictions? We've talked about this before, but what do you think is going to happen? Because we know the Democrats. Let's just talk about the national. I think there's a lot of races in North Carolina that are up for grabs, and we can let Andy kind of give the expertise on that. But do you just have a – just from where we're standing today, I know this can change. Do you think Donald Trump or Joe Biden is going to win in November? I know I'm throwing you a curveball right off the bat.
My prediction as of today, so I might – let's revisit this next month. I predict that President Trump is probably going to be reelected again.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I see a lot of I see even some of the Trump fans out there, you know, the MAGA hat wearing crowd, kind of saying that he's not going to get reelected. And I've actually had some close friends of mine that are very, very pro Trump text me almost for reassurances, asking if I think Trump's going to get reelected because they feel he's not going to. And I could see this going either way. So I don't know if I could give a prediction, but.
Well, you made me give a prediction, even though I could see it going either way. So now
I actually agree with you. I don't think the polls matter too much at the moment.
Supposed to say that when we do polling at Civitas.
Well, I meant this far out. I mean this far out for the general election.
Yes.
They matter more in North Carolina in terms of, you know, what the state's, you know, what the state's going to do. And actually, our polls are really good. And so I mean more what's going to happen, you know, in the Joe Biden, Donald Trump race 5-6 months out.
Yeah, public opinion, certainly there is some predictability, but even so, how are we measuring it? I think that is something that pollsters ever since 2016 election have had to grapple with, is the fact that there was support for President Trump much broader than they anticipated. And so they weren't asking the right questions. I think a lot of organizations and political groups have learned from that and are starting to ask different questions. But I mean, let's just be honest, 2020 has been such a curveball writ large that, I mean, I say right now, I think President Trump will probably be reelected, but who knows what's going to happen even next week.
Right. And Valerie, our friend on Twitter, highlighted this, and I hadn't listened to the podcast yet, but she made a reference, really the first presidential election. I remember 1984, but I didn't follow it too closely as a 5-year-old. I just wanted Reagan to win, but I didn't know a ton about politics. But I followed 1988, George H.W. Bush versus Michael Dukakis. And at convention time, Dukakis had a 17-point lead over Bush in 1988 and ended up losing by, I think it was 8%. But in the summer convention, Dukakis was up over Bush like 17 or 18 points at one point, and he lost by like 8 points. So it just kind of tells you that there can be some wild swings.
Yes.
Many years. Well,
I think it's pretty interesting, Ray, that you just were able to spout off those numbers from the 80s, and you just asked me how many months till the election and said you weren't a numbers person.
Oh, I can remember.
You just proved yourself.
Yeah, I'm much more on a lot of current events. I know less than I'd say like on maybe 1980 politics or 19 60s politics or 1950s politics, I probably know less about current events than I know about what was going on then and what the numbers were then. Only because I like to read and study history more than I like to like face the reality of what's going on today, Brooke.
So you kind of shelter in place in the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, you can only wait, the shallow end of some of the stuff going on today.
Oh, my word. Oh, I don't know what that noise is, but
I don't either.
Okay. We'll have Joe edit that part out. But yeah, you're right. So it's anybody's game right now, I think, but it will also be interesting to see how the condensed election season and possibly less campaign rallies or fewer campaign rallies and maybe not even any really substantive debates. Not that any of the presidential debates over the past, decade have been substantive, but there will be, I think, even less of that this season. So that will be interesting to see if that impacts how the electorate votes.
Now, Trump said he's going to start rallies again soon. And I think there's going to be one in North Carolina. I haven't looked at the schedule, but Trump will be coming back to North Carolina soon for a rally. I don't know where, but traditionally he hasn't done it in the big urban environments, per se, like Charlotte or Raleigh. So it'd be interesting to see where he's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So, hey, let's talk about something that has bothered me personally as a parent. And I feel like we need to discuss this and make our listeners aware of what might be awaiting them on the roads come this next couple months. And that's that there is a bill that has passed the General Assembly and it's gone to Governor Cooper for his signature. And it would waive the DMV road test requirement for teens because of coronavirus so that the DMV employee doesn't have to sit in the car with the teen. And as a parent of a 16-year-old that has been begging to get her road test so she can get her license, I've got serious hesitation about this bill. What do you think? Like, are you afraid to drive on the road with teens that haven't been tested with a regular road test like we had to undergo?
I'm afraid to drive on the roads with people who have been tested with a road test. So I can't imagine it being better for the untested population. With all this coronavirus stuff, getting in your car is really the most dangerous thing you can do today. So just keep that in mind. So I'm always – there's a role for the state, Brooke, and when it comes to driving, I always take a high view in terms of the state can do some regulatory things on the road because it is so dangerous. Now, highway safety has gotten safer with technology in cars, airbags, and different things. But yeah, it would concern me for sure. I mean, I've known a few people who have died in auto collisions, not real close to me, but I've known a few people that have. It's a scary thing to do. I mean, you're driving down the road with these huge hunks of steel, although a lot of the modern cars are a little bit more plastic. But, people drive crazily fast, especially in this state, being a NASCAR state. That's one thing I do miss a little bit about Mississippi is, I felt like people were a little more apt to go to the speed limit. Here in North Carolina, see a lot of speeding. And you have a lot of traffic, of course, from out of state as well. You've got some Northeasterners here who are either visiting or living, and they tend to drive pretty fast and erratic at times. So, yeah, it can
Ray's anti-Northeastern bias is showing over there.
I used to live in the Northeast, so I can say that. I've driven in Boston, driven in Philly. Used to live in Philly, used to live in New Hampshire. So I know how people drive up there. I got relatives that are from there.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm not just saying this in a vacuum. There's a lot of crazy drivers up there.
Oh, no, I agree. So my husband takes pride in the fact that he drives like a New Yorker. And he's not afraid to use the horn. He's not afraid to use, PG hand gestures. He won't flip the bird or anything, but he has feelings on the road. And so I'm like regularly covering my eyes and trying to like sink into the seat when we pass people that he has blessed with his thoughts. So I get
that whole. My grandpa, my grandfather Les, self-made man, served in World War II. We went on a fishing trip when I was still in high school, and we drove from we drove from Mississippi to Florida, then we drove from Florida to Michigan, then Michigan to International Falls, Minnesota, and then into Canada. And he's not a great driver. We were driving on I-10 in Florida, and he told me, I'm going to show you how not to get a ticket in speed. Well, he just got behind this like Saab, or I don't know if it was a Saab or Porsche at the time. I don't remember. But he's just going to decide to go real fast behind this car. And he goes, the state trooper or state highway patrolman will get the person in front of me. Well, the state highway patrolman got them both. Oh. And then, yeah. And then we're like driving. What's that?
Oh, I just said, take that, grandpa.
Yeah. And then we're driving up through the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And he's like, can be a little bit erratic on the road. And he would do this thing. He had this Toyota Camry he was really proud of. It was brand new. Had a Lexus engine. Also had a sunroof. He would like flick people off. He would, he's like, gosh, he must've been in his 70s then, but he would like open up the sunroof and do this, like what he called the five finger bird. He would start like one finger, you know, and then like all the way up to his middle finger and stuff. And it was just pretty funny.
Oh my gosh.
And he was on so much medication that we had to stop because he had to go to the bathroom all the time, but it was such a memorable trip.
He sounds like a very colorful man that I would like to meet.
Oh, he was definitely colorful for sure. he had tons of tattoos that he got in the Navy and even before that. I mean, because he lived in Groton, Connecticut, in on the shipyard where the Coast Guard is at, and he would get tattoos when he was like 12, 13, 14.
Wow. So,
great man. Self-made man. Was only had a eighth grade education, I think, or maybe a little bit more. His dad left him. He joined the Navy, served in the Atlantic Theater, served in the Pacific Theater, became an engineer, civilian engineer in the Army. So just kind of a great story, but he was a funny character.
That's fascinating. Sounds like a very interesting man. I love that we can have, I guess, a treasury of stories of those that came before us and some of our ancestors to kind of just help people nowadays. It gives them a little bit of a window, I think, into what things were like back then. And sadly, some people don't even ask their parents and grandparents questions about what it was like when they were younger. I had a family member who's older, and I asked him what it was like for him growing up in another country. And he told me I was the first one that ever asked him about that. And I just was amazed that people would pass up the opportunity to learn about life in a different time. And I think we should always make sure we're taking some time to ask those that came before us what their lives were like, because it offers us a little bit more perspective on our present, I think. Right now it feels in a lot of ways like the world is burning. And there's just a lot of angst and animosity, and we feel like the social fabric and cohesion is just at an all-time low. And so you hear about other people and how they made things work during their times. I think we can draw some lessons from that. But, you know, one of the things that we can draw lessons from are movies and art and history. And there's been a lot of this cancel culture cropping up as a result of the continued discussion that we're having about race. And so I'm going to get your thoughts on this. HBO has said that they are going to be removing, or they have removed, Gone with the Wind until they can properly contextualize it.
Properly contextualize it? What do you think that they'll do? Like edit scenes?
I think the jury's still out on how HBO is going to handle that. But anyways, why don't you just give some thoughts on what you think about cancel culture and how we could properly approach some of these?
Yeah, well, I got lots of thoughts on that, Brooke. I mean, when you study history and you study history seriously, I don't know how familiar, I assume you're somewhat familiar with the Khmer Rouge. You're certainly familiar with the Soviet Union, the Maoist revolution in China, one of the big things that they did was try to reset history, particularly the Khmer Rouge and the Maoists in China, as they would tear down statues, they would tear down things from the past to try to get rid of it. And so you kind of see this Marxist element, in my opinion, of things going on. You see it even, you know, when it becomes a mob mentality, it loses all form of reason. I mean, you could say, well, we're only going to tear down Confederate statues. And then that turns into other things. I mean, you even have cases today or yesterday or whenever it was in Philadelphia. You had the abolitionist hero statue.
Yeah,
you
had the 54th. Matthias Baldwin.
Yeah. 54th Massachusetts, which was a famous movie in the 80s. I believe it was the 80s, maybe 1988 or something. Glory, 88, 89, 90. Glory is a movie about the 54th Massachusetts Regiment. I think it starred Matthew Broderick. Denzel Washington was in it. Morgan Freeman was in it. But it's about a group of African-American soldiers. Many of them were former slaves, and how they formed their own regiment. They were one of the first black regiments in the Civil War, how they fought to help free the nation of slavery. Their monument was desecrated. So you see the kind of lunacy that comes out of mob violence, mob mentality of thinking. So to me, cancel culture really just has a Marxist element to it, partly because it's irrational. I think in the West, we're really struggling now because we have these Marxist tendencies, and we're struggling too with sort of a moral libertinism. And, you know, it's neither direction's good. Some of those directions or some of those movements are intertwined together, but we're not headed for good times in America, especially when you have the breakdown of order. I mean, Russell Kirk, one of the most important things he talks about, to have liberty, to have justice, you must have order. And when order starts to break down in society, you see this in many urban cities. By the way, I'll add, these cities were run by Democrats for 40, 50 years. These unions, police unions too, heavily influenced by the Democratic Party, the city councilmen and women, Democrats, for the most part. And so, yeah. You know, I don't really want to make it partisan, but it feels like it is in a way, because that's where a lot of these problems are today in some of these urban environments. And it's just disturbing to watch, because I think when you have a breakdown of culture and breakdown of society, and I think this is an indictment of Trump too, because I think Trump, in a way, and I don't want to accuse him of too much because I don't know his thinking, but I think he sees this as a political advantage to him. If the fabric of the nation is torn apart, then I will be reelected because there will be a backlash, or there will be a a silent majority that rises up to crush these people at the ballot box. But that's not good policy. That's not good. That's not having a good heart.
It's not good leadership. I mean,
because what he's allowing to happen, which I think he's allowing to happen to some degree, is not good. And I think, too, I think there's some on the right that are missing the mark and are tone deaf on this, too. And they just said, well, we just need to have criminal justice reform and this and that, and throw some bones to the mob. But no, I mean, I think there's no reasoning. There's no rationale with the mob. And you're seeing that in some cities where they're tearing down statues, destroying property. And to me, it's foolishness, and it's not a good thing. And I'm not going to rationalize it. I'm not going to say it's okay. I'm not going to say there's certainly people out there hurting. There's certainly people out there angry. But once it becomes a mob sort of mentality, it's no longer justified, and it's criminality, in my opinion. And it's a bad look. It's a bad look for the politicians. It's a bad look for the people that are doing it. It hurts the middle class, the kind of people that play by the rules in this country, the people that pay their taxes. I don't have certainly I'm all for police reforms, but I'm also for a equitable and just society that's ordered. So I guess that ends
and
that.
And I don't think they're not in conflict either. You know, meaningful police reforms that actually enable the good officers to be able to do the job that they love while still, you know, so it enables them to do that when we have police reform. And then it also allows them to make sure and ensure public safety. But I think that if anything good, and I use that term just so loosely right now, if anything good can come out of this really, really difficult situation, I hope that we have a real conversation about what the purpose of law enforcement is for. And I know it certainly caused me to think more deeply about this. You know, why do the police exist? How are they different from the military? What is their role in society? How can we improve relations among communities that are oftentimes either poor or minority communities, which aren't the same thing? How do we improve these relations? And so I hope that we on the right can have a seat at the table of this conversation. But something I'm afraid of, at least for fellow conservatives, is that we're so threatened by the mob mentality, which I get. I mean, it gets me so upset. Just even my husband was in law enforcement for a long time, and just being a military kid and army wife, I want to give no ground to the mob mentality, but I hope that we can at least capitalize on this moment to insert some really good conservative ideas into this din calling for justice. And we can help people kind of think through what justice should actually look like in a society that is ordered by constitutional imperatives.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. So some of the stuff that I've saw in the news that it's, you mentioned Gone with the Wind. I saw there's a New York Times piece about Paw Patrol. For those that are unfamiliar with Paw Patrol, my kids are big fans of Paw Patrol, and it's a cartoon. So it has like animals. I don't watch it closely when they're watching it. We only give them a little bit of screen time each day. But it's basically animals that dress up like a police officer. I think it's a tracking dog. Maybe a fireman, you know, paramedic. They're dogs that help people. People are legitimately out there trying to get that canceled. Cops has already been canceled, the show Cops. Never been a big fan of the show, but that's one show that's been canceled. I think CBS or something put out a statement. I don't want to say CBS because I don't remember the network, but one of the major networks I thought I saw put out a statement that said they were reviewing all their shows about police officers and whatnot. So it shows you kind of the absurdity going on.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, and this is the thing. If we run from this conversation and we just kind of poke fun, we're kind of giving ground to this other side that's really has zero in terms of concern about the long-term societal health. They're just kind of concerned about the winning the next election. And so I think we need to help people think critically through these things. Why is it silly to oppose Paw Patrol? Why is that, you know, why can't we have a real conversation about Gone with the Wind and the characterizations it made? And that, I mean, that requires just, I think, a little bit of just calmness and willingness to listen to people's concerns, but also being willing not to cede any ground to the mob.
What do you want to see canceled? Anything that you would?
Oh, like to yes, see yes. I actually tweeted about this. I want it, since everything is being canceled, and I've just lamented cancel culture. There is one thing I want to be canceled, and that is ugly buildings. I very much feel strongly that brutalist architecture. What is that FBI building? That nasty ugly one.
Which one? Building. I've been in there once. The J. Edgar Hoover building. I don't think that's the worst, though. There's worse ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of 1960s style, what I would call East Berlin architecture in Washington, D.C.
Even our General Assembly isn't pretty. And I'm sorry if anyone here is listening that's from the General Assembly. I'm sorry, but it's not pretty.
It's one of the worst in the country, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I used to live in Washington State, and I loved visiting Olympia to go see the beautiful architecture of their capital. And ours looks kind of like a Japanese steakhouse.
It's really bad. West Virginia has a really pretty capital. Yes, when you're driving that highway on Charleston.
Mm-hmm. That golden roof.
Yeah, it's all lit up. It's really pretty. Yeah, I mean, you should try to. You know, I'm not for government for spending excessive funds, but you should spend a little bit on your capital.
I'll donate a couple extra tax dollars to you guys.
Don't you think there's an argument, Brooke, that if you're actually in a beautiful capital, you may be more apt to pass some beautiful legislation to steal some words from Trump, you know?
I don't know, because look at Washington State. I mean, they're pretty crazy over there. And like I said, they've got a beautiful capital. And Olympia is like a mini Portland. So I'm not quite sure there that the data bears it out, but I like the idea of that.
Yeah, so, I have no idea. It's a good theory.
I think it's so good too. Well, so Ray, we've got, you know, things are starting. We're still in phase two. We're going to be in phase three, hopefully, fingers crossed, I think, in another couple weeks. And so do you guys foresee anything different for your family once phase three comes around the corner?
I honestly don't know. I feel like things are more back to normal. Our son's in swimming lessons now, our three-year-old. We're starting to, you know, be able to do some stuff that's a little bit more normal. We're about to take some plane trips this summer. So I'll be out for a few spots in the end of June and July. So, you know, I'm just optimistic with this data that we will continue to get back to normal. One of the things I noticed about the news, and I'm all for people protesting, getting out there, sharing their grievances and being upset if they're legitimately upset about the way that they're treated by law enforcement, all for that. But when you had 200,000, and I'm not criticizing this, but when you had 200,000 people in Memorial Park in Philadelphia, I've been there before, and you know there wasn't any social distancing going on, and that's fine. But I think that should change kind of the atmosphere if they kind of look back at some of that data and those measurements coming out of that. And I just don't know how these governors can continue to kind of throw down a heavy-fisted rulings when it comes to COVID-19 or the coronavirus crisis. To me, when you kind of seen some of these protests, to me, it's hard to justify some of these actions if they're going to continue right, on yeah. that path. Some of these blue state governors, particularly Governor Cooper, the hypocrisy is getting a little old. And, you know, I'm all for the science. And if the science says that there's no young, you know, spike, especially among young people, the data among young people, if you really dig in, is really, really good. You're still more likely to die from the flu if you're under 30, I believe. So given this data, I don't see, you know, I know Dallas has written and Bob has written about a lot of educational policies related to coronavirus on our website right now, nccivitas.org, that I don't see how you can put up some crazy formula for return. I'm all for some basic safeties in social distancing for return to school, but I don't think you can have these crazy measures like you're starting to see trickle in from some of these states. And I'm all for kids. Don't think I'm not for keeping kids safe, because I am, but I just, some of these measures, given what's going out and with these protests and the positive data with young people, I don't think you can go down that route. I'm sure you probably agree.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, if the data is telling us something about kids' safety and indicates that this was or is becoming a significant threat among that population, then let's adjust course as necessary. No loving parent is going to put their child in harm's way. But from everything we've heard from parents, and we've heard from a couple hundred parents at least, you know, this just a lot of the restrictions that they're floating around for the fall just seem terribly out of place and excessive. And so I think that when governments try to create onerous restrictions that are beyond reasonable, then people begin to push back. So I think government needs to wield its power carefully and not destroy all the capital it's built with the people, with the voters, with the taxpayers, by leveling onerous restrictions on them in ways that just don't even match up with the data. So.
Right. We had Cooper veto a bill, I think it was June 8th, on the bars. To me, that was such an arbitrary veto, because most restaurants, and I mean most bars in North Carolina, are attached to restaurants, and to kind of single out bars in that manner when everybody's behaving in the same way was ridiculous. And I don't understand that. Can you help me understand that, Brooke? I'm not trying to be like on the governor's not. But I've kind of dug around a little bit, not as much as some people, I'll admit, but I haven't seen a good justification for that. And I went into Cooper's page and kind of looked at that and just didn't really see a good justification? Can you, is he just like a teetotaling Baptist? What's going on?
I don't know. I mean, I have heard him and others that have defended it say, you know, that people's judgment is impaired in a bar in a way that it might not be at a restaurant bar, because the exclusive purpose of going to a regular bar is just to drink more than you would at a restaurant bar. And so I think there's that maybe is playing into it, but I don't defend it. I think there's just a lot of inconsistency. A lot of these orders strike me as arbitrary, especially even thinking about the reopen North Carolina protest versus the other, the George Floyd protest, and then sadly the subsequent rioting and looting. There's just been this double standard that's been held by the media in a lot of quarters and from the Cooper administration that I think just don't really hold water. So I'm not going to defend his opposition to it.
Gotcha.
Anyways, well, I think we're about out of time. So we're going to have to cut this baby short. But Ray, do you have any closing words and thoughts?
No, I'm just like, I know we've said this before, but try to improve the communities around you and not get sucked into the news cycle like some kind of zombie. And I know that's hard to do sometimes, especially if you're spending a little bit more time at home. But take heart, because there's a lot of people out there that share our values, share our worldview, and don't get sucked into the chaos. You have a duty and a moral obligation to your family to try to live your life in order and to be a joyful person and make a difference where you are.
Absolutely. Very much agree. You all have a wonderful week, and thank you for joining us.